Welcome to Silence the Mind Cluck. I'm your host, Maria T. Finch, and I'm super glad that you're here. Get ready to quiet that mind and reap the rewards. All right, welcome everyone. I'm Maria Finch. I'm an intuitive strategy guide, and I am thrilled to have Mark Williams with me here today. Mark, welcome.
Thank you, Maria. Thanks for having me along.
Yeah, so glad to have you. So to start out with, tell us a bit about you.
So I'm a cognitive neuroscientist by trade. Uh-huh. I've worked for too many years in that area, both as a researcher and as an academic. I worked in MIT for a while, and then I came back to Australia, where I live now, and worked at several universities. A few years ago, I took voluntary redundancy so I could spend more time out in the community. And now I work with schools and businesses on teaching people about the neuroscience and how their brains work so that they can actually be more effective both at work and at school. Most of the time I work with teachers and with students, which is really, really fun, but also with businesses, because businesses are now realizing that, you know, their most important asset is their employees' brains. Yeah. And keeping them healthy is really, really important.
Yeah, so true. Gosh, this is such an important topic, and I feel like it's so timely. I think in the world right now, people being more conscious and being able to tap into their true abilities is so key for everything that we have going on in the world. So I have a bazillion questions for you, but let's start out with just give us a little bit of information between, you know, sort of what the brain, what you're consciously thinking about versus what's going on subconsciously. Let's start there.
That's a minefield in itself, but that's an interesting spot to start.
Yeah.
So we do have, there's two main areas. I'll talk about areas, but they're not really areas. The whole brain sort of works as a synergy. But we have what we call a working memory, which is what we're consciously aware of, which is the stuff that you're aware of right now. And it's what's processing my voice and my prosody. And so you're understanding what I'm saying and how I'm feeling. And all of that stuff is in your working memory. But that's really, really limited, because the world's a really, really complex place. And we can't process everything that's actually happening or all the inputs that we're actually receiving. So the working memory is limited to what we used to talk about. Seven slots. So there's seven slots in working memory that you can use and manipulate. And that's all we have access to. So in the old days, before we had smartphones, all phone numbers were limited to six numbers. And they were limited to six numbers because we only have seven slots in our working memory. And we didn't have any way of dialing the number through, you know, contacts and so on that we do these days on smartphones. So we had to remember the number. To remember the number, if you don't actually have it in your long-term memory, you actually have to hold it in your working memory. So you're using up six of those slots if it's a six-digit number, and then you need one more slot to actually dial the number, because you also need your working memory to do stuff. So our numbers were always limited to six numbers because of that, yeah, which is a pretty interesting aspect to it. Now, of course, because we've got mobile phones or cell phones, we don't have any limit to that because they're held in our cell phone, so we don't actually have to use that. The crazy thing is we think, and all the research is coming out now, suggests that our working memory is actually limited now to about four or five slots, because we're not using it as much as we used to use it because of the fact that we now have cell phones and all those things. So we don't actually hold stuff in our working memories as much. But that's all we actually have access to, is those seven slots at any one time.
Wow.
So the vast majority of what we do is actually unconscious. It's actually, we're not actually aware of it. This morning I had a coffee and I was actually doing stuff on my laptop at the same time. And then all of a sudden I went to have a drink of my coffee and my coffee cup was empty. Now, I've been drinking my coffee without actually thinking about the fact that I was drinking my coffee, because all of that stuff happens automatically. Yeah, we don't actually think about that. But that's not the only thing. They think somewhere between 40 and 60% of the things we actually do during the day, not think about, but just actually physically do, we don't actually think that we are actually doing. We're not actually thinking about it. We're doing it automatically based on our habits that we actually perform every day. So most of what we do seems to be based on these habits and based on this long-term memory. So all these rules and triggers that we have in our long-term memory that actually determine what we do during the day. And that's a lot of this mind cluck that you talk about is all of the things that our mind is actually doing in that unconscious area of our brain while we're actually doing the busy work. And, of course, we're very busy these days, so we're doing lots of stuff. We're not actually getting much done, but we're doing a lot of stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's all feeding, all controlling our working memory, and we're not thinking about all the other stuff that's actually going on in our long-term memory, in our unconscious areas of our brain. We need to be more aware of that.
And so going back to mind clock, so when your brain is telling you, oh, you can't do this, you're not good enough, you're not whatever enough, how does that fit into the working memory and the long-term memory?
So, yeah, in our long-term memory is everything that's stored and everything from our past. So we don't think about our memory system now as being there for us to remember the past. It's actually for us to act in the future. So we only have a memory system so that we can do things better in the future. And so our long-term memory is full, and it's a huge, huge store of information of all the stuff we've done in the past and all the procedures and processes that we're able to do and how to kick a football and how to ride a bicycle and who our parents were and what they smelled like and what an apple pie smells like and how to cook an apple pie and all the myriad of things that we're actually able to do. But it's also all the stuff about us and about all the people around us. So if you're constantly thinking, or if you have thought, or if you've done something that hasn't worked, you may have stored in that long-term memory ideas about yourself that aren't very nice.
Okay,
and those things are going to pop up constantly. Yeah, so those things are going to pop up while your working memory, your consciousness, is working on something. All of that stuff is also going on down here. And that's actually where innovation, creativity happens. It happens in this unconscious area. It doesn't actually happen in our conscious area. So all that stuff's going on all the time, and it then bubbles up occasionally and starts annoying us and telling us that we're not as good as we think we are and stuff. But it's probably based on stuff that you've done in the past that's then been stored in there that then is coming up as you're doing other things. And you may not sort of relate the two, but it's probably because of activation within your brain, because all of your memories are all linked to each other in different ways. So one thing that I like to talk about is, which a lot of people relate to, is my father. Whenever I smell cinnamon, I think of my father. And the reason I do that is that whenever he had a win at the races, he used to bring home an apple pie and cook it in the oven to celebrate that. And I get that smell of the apple pie, which has cinnamon in it, of course.
Sure.
And that reminds me of my father, because all those connections are all related to each other. So the smell of cinnamon, the apple pie, my father coming home and he was happy and it was a fun time in the house are all really cool. Connected, so they all relate to each other. So we might be doing something, and something completely we think is unrelated activates a neuron, which then activates another neuron, which is related to that in some way, which then activates that whole series of things, which is, I did blah. I was typing on my computer, 6 months ago, and I wrote a silly email, right? And then 6 months later, you're typing on your computer. That activates the same neurons associated with what you did way back then. That then activates this stupid email that you sent that you don't actually think about, but in your long-term memory, in your unconscious area, it activates it, which makes you go, oh, I'm an idiot because I sent this email, but you don't actually think about that at the time.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Okay, so now getting to, so I understand, so it's like you've got a neural pathway that's been carved based on an experience. So your dad comes home with apple pie, so you have all these associations that go with it. So it's like there's a physical thing that is happening in your brain that is connecting all of this together. What happened? Yeah, so for mind clock, where we're telling ourselves negative things, and so like you gave the example of the email, it's like, oh, in the past, you wrote this stupid email. And so now when you're writing another email, you're thinking like, oh, I'm stupid. I can't write an email or whatever it might be. What is one's ability to shift that belief and to create a different neural pathway so that your brain doesn't automatically take you into this negative spiral?
That's the wonderful thing about the brain and what we know about the brain now. Our brains are, we call it neuroplasticity, which is just that our brains are constantly changing. And so our brains today are different to the way they were yesterday, and they'll be different again tomorrow. So our brains are constantly changing. And we know even our IQ changes quite dramatically over our life. So we can become much smarter or much dumber. So the idea of actually testing a kid when they're young and saying this is how smart they are isn't a great way to actually categorize them, because they will change. And we know even in the teenage years, just from 13 to 18, your IQ can change up to 15 basis points, which is, you know, you can go from your average to well above average in IQ just during your teen years. But during your lifetime, you can have a huge change in your IQ. And that's because of this neuroplasticity. It's constantly changing. Constantly changing, which is really, really cool. And something we only realized in the last 25 years or so. But what that means is that you can change your thoughts. You can change the way you actually think if you keep repeating it. So we know we Hebbian learning is basically the way the cells wire themselves up. And the idea there is that cells that fire together wire together. So the more cells are active with each other, the stronger they get. So and also emotion also plays into that. So emotion actually makes that stronger. So it actually makes those connections stronger. So in the case of my father, we'll go back to the apple pie, because every time he did every time something positive happened for him, he would bring home an apple pie. We would have, you know, apple pie at home, which of course was very emotionally charged. And so those neurons would all wire up together and would be very strong with each other, which is why I still get it now many, many years later. And I still have those strong connections there. So what you want to do is you want to repeat the positive things, and of course they'll wire up together, and those things that are the negative thoughts will actually get weaker if you continue to do them. So you've got to somehow dampen down those negative thoughts and increase the positive thoughts, and the positive thoughts will actually come stronger. Those neurons will become stronger, so they'll be more likely to fire, and those negative thoughts will be less likely to fire as you move through life. So we've just got to focus on the positive and try and ignore or dampen down the negative. Probably not ignore, because if you're ignoring it, then you're just trying to shut it down, whereas you actually want to try and control it and stop it from actually happening in the first place. But yeah, neuroplasticity means that we can change any of those thoughts if you want to.
Right, right. So in my own experience, I have done a lot of work on changing limiting beliefs. So I can go back to an experience that I had and I can identify, okay, what is the limiting belief that got formed in that experience? So for example, I'll just pick something silly. Say it's like, when I was little, I had a bad experience cooking something in the kitchen. And so I decided that I'm a horrible cook. And so I go through life just believing I'm a horrible cook. And in my experience, the first thing to do is to understand that that experience happened. So it's like actually remembering, you know, going through a process to remember that that experience happened and then putting it into context. So perhaps when I was trying to cook that thing, I was five. I didn't really know how to cook. You know, I didn't have proper adult supervision, whatever. And then recognizing the difference between when that belief formed and where I am today. So where I am today is I'm a fully capable adult. I know how to read a recipe. I can take classes, blah, blah, blah. And then my understanding is that by recognizing the context and understanding that because I'm an adult now with full resources, I can now believe like, oh, I can be a great cook. And then I can keep emphasizing that and gain the skills that I need and then turn myself into a great cook. So in that example, what would you say is happening in the brain?
Yeah, it's a great example, actually. When you were younger and you made that mistake, obviously, because when we're younger, we take a lot more in, because our brains are obviously, you know, much more malleable and there's a lot more room there to put things. And so those things really do affect, seem to affect us a lot more when we're younger than when we're older. But we have this self-belief that all of a sudden, oh, we're not a good cook, so we're not going to ever be a good cook. We have this limiting idea about ourselves. And then in our long-term memory, we put down this rule because we have all these rules in our long-term memory.
Okay.
That rule is I'm not a good cook, right? And so that actually gets established in your brain. And then every time you go to cook or every time you think about cooking, that gets activated. And so therefore, through that Hebbian learning, those neurons get stronger and stronger and stronger. So you really do believe, oh, I'm not a good cook. And you may not remember why you're not a good cook. You're lucky enough to actually reflect on that, and which is what you need to do, or you need to try and work out where that comes from. But because most of us don't think about why it is we're having these feelings, why we're having these beliefs, it just keeps getting stronger and stronger until we get to this point where we don't believe it. And we see this in kids all the time who believe they're no good at maths because, they fail a maths test or they have a maths teacher they don't like. And then they just believe from then on, I'm not good at maths. Anyone can be good at maths. If you want to be good at maths, you've just got to actually spend the time learning how to be good at maths and believe that you're actually good at maths, and then you can become good at maths or reading or any of these things. We need to change that and realize that what we believe is in our heads and it's not actually real, and we can change what we believe in our heads, because everything we perceive is actually not real. It's all generated in our heads, and so therefore that can actually change.
And so taking this example out just a little further, it's like So the idea of giving context to a belief, so saying, so I believe I'm not a good cook. I mean, I actually don't believe that. I'm a fabulous cook, but I'm just using it as an easy example. So I believe I'm not a good cook, but then I figure out I formed that belief when I was 5, and now I've decided I want to be a good cook. And so I'm going to take classes and I'm going to learn from people who are good cooks and whatever. So in doing that, my understanding, and tell me if this is right or not, is that I'm actually creating a new neural pathway. I'm using the neural plasticity of the brain to say, okay, instead of automatically thinking like I go into the kitchen and I'm a terrible cook, I go into the kitchen and I'm developing skills, and then I can believe I'm a good cook. I'm always going to be a good cook. And so by letting go of the past belief and then focusing on the new belief, you're essentially like rewiring your brain.
Exactly. Yeah. So every time we have a new thought, we are slowly rewiring our brain, and everything we do slowly rewires our brain. And so, by taking our thoughts away from this idea that we're not a good cook means that those neurons will slowly atrophy, because not only do the cells that fire together wire together, the ones that aren't firing together anymore actually slowly atrophy. So the ones that aren't firing, aren't being used, will slowly atrophy because we don't need them anymore. And the ones that you are firing, that you're actually using, which is gone and done a cook course, and I've made cakes and so on that have been great, and everyone said they taste delicious, that'll all be get reinforced through the Hebbian learning, and all that stuff about you not being a good cook will slowly atrophy away and will no longer be there eventually after a long period of time of not actually being used. Because the really important thing about neuroplasticity that we often don't talk about is the flip side, which is if you're not using an ability or if you're not using particular neurons, they do atrophy, right? So they actually decrease in their firing, they'll decrease in their usage, which is why mobile phones are causing issues with a lot of people, because of the fact that we're not doing a lot of the stuff that we used to do, on working memory, right? We're not holding things in our memory anymore because it's all in our phone. So therefore, we're not actually exercising that area of our brain. So that area of our brain is slowly atrophying.
Wow, that is fascinating. I am somebody, I can still tell you my first phone number in my life. I'm 56 and, I still remember it. But wow, that's fascinating. And so in the interest of keeping one's mind really healthy, what do you recommend?
The number one thing, the best thing for our brains as humans to exercise them is actually to sit down in front of somebody in real life and have a conversation. our social areas of our brain are actually dominate our brain. So more of our brain is actually dedicated to being social than anything else we do. So we became the alpha species because we collaborate. And the only way you collaborate is actually being really social, is actually being kind to each other and actually working with each other. And you know, and we've got to this stage because we're so connected, right? We're connected over you and I are talking across continents.
Yeah, I know.
Across continents, we actually collaborate with each other. Yeah, and it's amazing now that we're so connected. And you know, everything that I've got in my room here, my office, you know, I couldn't have made myself. It's been made by other people, by millions and millions of other people around the world. And I now take advantage of that, and then I do the stuff I do. And we've got to this stage because our brains are social. So more of our brain is activated when we sit down and actually chat to someone, because that's what our brains are really designed to do. And so that activates more of your brain, and it'll actually keep you your brain healthier than anything else you can actually do. So the best way to exercise your brain is sit down face-to-face with someone and have a conversation with them, and that'll activate more of your brain than anything else you can do and keep it healthier than anything else you can do, which is why in nursing homes now they take them out on excursions, and they'll have people come in and interact with them, and they'll sit them down and have them, you know, doing playing cards and doing all those things, because we know that that can extend your life by up to 10, 15 years and delay things like Alzheimer's disease and dementia and those things, because of the fact that you're exercising your brain. You're really working your brain hard, because it's really hard to actually socialize. To socialize is a really complex thing to do. We do it really well because of the fact we have big brains that are able to do that. But we have big brains to do that because it is so complicated.
And so do you count us talking as a face-to-face encounter, even though we're not in the same room?
It's not as good. So this is not great for multiple reasons. One of them is we don't get to touch each other, and touch in an appropriate way. So when we touch each other, we have C-fibers on our skin, and C-fibers are on us and primates. And the C-fibers activate an area of our brain which releases oxytocin, which makes us more connected and makes us more open and willing to actually interact with somebody. Now, we don't get that when we're on a device like this, because we don't get the opportunity to touch each other, which is why in all societies you actually have some way of greeting someone where you actually touch them. So in Stoic societies, we shake hands, which allows us to touch each other. Inuits, because they don't have any part of their body showing except for their noses, they'll rub noses because it's the only bit of their skin that's actually, and so in all societies we have some way of actually appropriately touching each other when we greet, so that we actually become more connected and therefore are more likely to collaborate with each other. So we don't get that important thing. We also don't get serotonin, which is also really important, and we get that through things like body language and so on. And because we don't see much of the body when we're in this situation, and also because I'm looking at myself, so I'll keep correcting my body language. So I actually won't show you how I'm really feeling because of the fact that I can see myself and I can respond to that, and I'll sit up. So everyone sits up pretty straight when they're on a device like this because they can see themselves, and so they keep correcting that. Whereas if we were face-to-face, if we were at a cafe or something, you know, and I was feeling depressed, I'd start slumping down, and then you go, are you okay? You know, what's going on there, and so on. So we get all those extra cues and so on when we're actually face-to-face that we don't actually get when we're actually on devices like this. So we don't get all the benefits. We get some of the benefits, but not all of the benefits. We do get the facial expressions, which is really good. So that's actually contagious. So when you smile, I activate my mirror neuron system, which is actually our motor system, which then activates my muscles a little bit to make me know how you're feeling based on the fact that I'm also smiling a little bit. So when you smile at someone, the person you smile at actually smiles a little bit themselves. So that's really important, and that's a great aspect to what we do in this way. And we also get the prosody of the voice, so how the voice intonates and everything during a conversation, and we can tell a lot from that also about how they're feeling and so on. So there are some things that are good about this sort of interaction, better than just typing to each other on an email.
Sure
But it's not as good as actually getting face to face, and it's not as complicated as getting face to face with someone, and you don't get all those extra neurotransmitters which are really important for that process.
Right. That is fascinating. So tell us more about how to tap into our own unconscious or subconscious, or however you describe, whatever term you put on there.
Term you use. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I don't like using conscious and unconscious because often people, think of Freud and a lot in, which I don't. Yeah, it wasn't healthy to think of it that way. But we don't have any other terms, so I'll use it anyway.
Okay.
We need to slow down. We need to stop. You know, the problem at the moment is we are all so busy, but we're not actually getting much done. And so we need to stop and actually think about what's actually happening in our unconscious. And our unconscious controls a lot of our body. So the physiological responses you have, the heartbeat and all those things. When your heart starts racing, that's because your unconscious mind is trying to tell you something. And so you need to stop and go, what is my unconscious mind trying to tell me? Mm-hmm. Now, it's trying to tell you something that it doesn't understand. So it's not that it's actually saying there is something dangerous out there. It's saying there's potentially something dangerous out there. Stop and actually work out what's actually going on. So a lot of the social anxieties and so on associated with that, not actually being aware of what your unconscious is actually doing and trying to trigger you in knowing what's actually happening around you. So the best way to do that, is just to slow down. We all need to slow down a bit and actually think about what's actually happening to us. A great example is walking into a room full of people, and a lot of people get anxious in that scenario. Mm-hmm. And the reason we get anxious in that scenario is there's a lot of faces that we're actually confronted with straight away. Mm-hmm. Now, your face perception mechanisms are actually automatic and they're processed without unconsciously. I actually was one of the people who discovered that about 25 years ago. And so therefore, when we walk into a room, all of those areas are attached to our amygdala, which sets off our fight or flight response, because it's saying there's lots of people here. You need to be aware of that, right? You need to look at all these people and work out whether you know them, whether they're in-group or out-group members, whether they're somebody who, whether they're happy or whether they're angry and all these things about them. But there's too many to process automatically and unconsciously. So your body is telling you, your unconscious is telling you, you need to stop and actually do that. Whereas a lot of people will just freak out because their heart will start racing, they'll start getting a little bit sweaty, they'll get really nervous, and then they'll actually think that they're having a panic attack, or they're getting that they're having social anxiety or something like that, or they'll just not enjoy themselves. They'll be grumpy and want to actually leave. So what you've got to do is just stop, look around and realize that, hey, these are all people I know, it's okay. Mm-hmm. I can slow down, I can actually be aware of that. So that's just one of the many examples. But that's a way of doing it. You've got to stop and you've got to slow down. You've got to allow you've got to empty your consciousness so that it can then access your unconscious to work out what's actually going on there, rather than having your consciousness, your working memory, constantly full of stuff because you're constantly thinking about stuff and therefore completely ignoring what's going on in your unconscious area.
That makes so much sense to me, because one of the things that I guide people to do is to actually pay attention to physical sensation. So that's your heart racing, your sweating, your muscles tense, anything like that. And then to pause and ask yourself, what's going on? And and just by asking that question, then you start to be like, oh, wait a minute. Okay, I'm worried about something else. I am angry at this person and I don't want to see them. You can start to actually translate it into something that you can work with, as opposed to just being in fight, flight, or freeze and just being, freaked out.
Yeah, absolutely. That's that whole process, because as I was saying, our working memory, our consciousness is so limited, and because there's so much stuff going on and we really do limit how much information gets into our consciousness, we're not aware of vast majority of what's actually going on.
Right.
But our long-term memory is actually working off all these old memories that we have about the world, and it's trying to be the detector of anything that's potentially dangerous, not really dangerous, but potentially dangerous. And it's using very old systems that evolved over millions of years to do that. And so therefore we need to be aware of how that all works so that we can then slow down and be aware of how our body's reacting to it. And then, and most of the time it's fine, right? Most of the time it's actually because of, someone you had an argument with last week, or, because you had a busy day at work today and you're still thinking in your unconscious areas about all this, the emails you send, or the discussion you've got to have tomorrow, or your kids aren't doing well at school, or whatever it happens to be. All that's all going on in your unconscious while you're actually trying to I don't know, go out for dinner or whatever with your partner. And so we have
Right.
to stop and think about that and go, hang on, all that doesn't matter now. That's stuff that I can put on hold. Unconsciousness, shush. I'm going to concentrate on what I'm doing at the moment, what's happening in front of me right now.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So we have completely blown through our time. I feel like I could talk with you for hours. So I just like to say, is there anything you'd like to leave with our audience with? And, you know, please mention your book. I know you've got a book.
Thank you. Yeah. I do have a book coming out. It's coming out very soon. It's called The Connected Species. Okay. I think there'll be a link to it on the website. It's all about everything we've been talking about, plus a lot more. It's all about how our brains have actually evolved so that we can connect, and all the really, really positive aspects to that, and then some of the negative aspects to that, and then how we can do it all better as we go in the future. Because I really think we're coming to a crossroads, and as a species, we really need to decide which way we're going to go. And I'm hoping, I'm positive, I think we are going to choose the right way to go, but it's going to take some effort, and I hope we're going to choose the right way rather than the wrong way. But I think the last few years have taught us that we really need to connect more, and we need to be more aware of the fact that we're all in this together, and it's one big happy family, and we need to be one big happy family working together to make sure the world continues in a positive direction.
Right, because we're all inhabiting the same giant rock. So
yeah, we are and there's no exit strategy.
Yeah, exactly. So any last thing you'd like to say to our audience before we sign off? Any last piece of advice or anything?
Slow down. Everybody slow down. We're too busy and we're not getting anything done. You need to act more slowly, and we need to concentrate on one thing at a time. Because of that limit to our consciousness, we actually need to just focus on one thing at a time and get rid of all the other distractions. And you'll be much more productive that way as well. Check out something called the Pomodoro Technique. It's a scientific program that's been going around for years and years and years, and it's still known as the most productive way to get stuff done. If you've got kids, teach them how to use it. If you're a professional, use it yourself in your workday life. You'll be way more productive than you ever have been. And it's a great one to look up.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for being here today. This was really fun. I'm so glad to get to talk with you.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, Maria. It was a real pleasure, and it went way too quickly.
It did. And I think we will have you come back if you're willing.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, thank you. Okay, everyone, thanks so much for listening, and have a wonderful day. Bye. Thanks for listening. If you found this content helpful, please like, comment, and share across your social media. Are you sick of Mind Clock clocking up your days? Book a free initial consult with me at mindclock.com and let's silence it. Thanks and have a great week.